Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Who knows what that was?
Well, that lively overture to begin today's midday was the overture to Candide. And we're going to focus on the music of Leonard Bernstein, or is it Bernstein? We'll find out from director John Demain, a Madison Symphony Orchestra music director, who is mounting a program for this weekend that will include a tribute or Bernstein memories. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and so we're going to find out, first of all, how did he pronounce his name?
I believe it's Leonard Bernstein.
All right.
Yeah, I've heard that he used to occasionally introduce himself as Lenny Bernstein. I think I heard that from Nicholas Lenomsky, but can't trust everybody.
Well, you know, none of us ever pronounced our names right in those days.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I know. And your name kind of belongs to the public after a while, doesn't it? And they can say
right.
it however they want
however
to.
They want.
What kind of a guy was he to work with? You worked with him back in the 80s?
Yes. I mean, I first met him at Tanglewood in 1971 when I was an associate fellow at the festival. And, of course, he was notoriously a larger-than-life personality. I mean, when he arrived at Tanglewood, it was as though the Red Seas parted. The first thing he did is announce he wanted the very next day to hear all of the conducting fellows, so they had to quickly rearrange their schedule. And I remember that he conducted that weekend the Beethoven Missus Solemnis, and it was really quite an experience. But Lenny was like a kid in many ways. You know, he wanted everybody to make the exception for him. Rules were for everybody else. So you know how orchestral services are supposed to last 2.5 hours, you know, that's for everybody else. For Lenny, the orchestra rehearsal lasted until it was over.
Mm-hmm. Could go
so,
on and on.
So we had that, and so as all the conductors, we sang in the bass section for the Missus Solemnis, and I remember that rehearsal must have went on for 3.5 hours. I mean, they sent out for donuts and coffee for the orchestra, for the chorus, for everybody. Whatever Lenny wanted, he got.
Whatever Lenny wants, Lenny gets. Well, and I guess the product was a result of that. I mean, some really solid performing.
Right. I mean, a little of that was unnecessary. And when I worked with him at Houston Grand Opera, I remember my David Gockley, you know, the general director of Houston Grand Opera, being absolutely scared to death that Lenny would bankrupt the company if he carried on that way. So in my conversations with Lenny leading up to the rehearsals, I realized that he liked you to make deals with him. So I made a deal with him. I said, Lenny, what if all of the orchestra rehearsals were 3 hours instead of 2.5? Not a minute passed, but you would have a three-hour rehearsal for every single one? Every single one. He said to me, deal. and lived by it and stuck to it.
Yeah, something you can budget for.
Right. He got something special, which was important to him, and we had something we could budget for, exactly. But my God, what he could say as a musician. You know, I mean, when I went to the Dakotas the first time, that apartment building, you know, where John Lennon lived and Lauren Bacall and where Lenny lived, I mean, he had this 10-gallon hat on. Somebody had just sent him. I couldn't get him to focus on music. You know, he was just so full of himself. And I was only to be granted 1 hour's audience. And about minute 59, I said, excuse me, maestro, but I really have some questions about West Side Story, which at that time I was conducting this major revival for him on Broadway, and he hadn't really joined it yet. We were in rehearsals, but he would join us in Miami for the out-of-town tryouts and all of that. And finally, I got him to, he said, well, play the prologue. And I started to play the prologue. Then he came over and he said, let me show you how we really wrote it. And they wrote it with all vocals. So, da-da-da-da, you know, all that stuff. Mm. You know, diddly-da-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da, ba-diddly-da, ba-ba, all had words. Mm. Sonny, he showed me. Sonny, they had words at the dance at the gym. They had words all through the piece. And he said it was Jerome Robbins who came in and said, nobody's going to listen to all that. We'll sing this, we'll dance that, and we'll talk this. And out of it came the great West Side Story. But even at Tanglewood, he said something to me, you know, with that weekend, the first weekend we met in 1971 when I conducted in front of him and he did a master class with us. And then we would just be able to sit around with him when he would be, at the shed or having a coffee or something, and he'd have a score, you know, and he would always be looking at the metronome markings. And the one thing he said to all of us in terms of studying a score is, he said, you have to study every measure, every note of the score, until you have decided that that note that the composer wrote right there is the only note that it could possibly be, that it was the inevitability of that composition. And in the process of you arriving at that, you would then own the piece. And it was a very interesting way of saying how hard we had to study in order to get inside the composer's
You had to know that piece.
Right.
Yeah. Know every note, and so therefore why every note was there. How would that apply to something like On the Town, for example?
Well, I mean, I think On the Town... See, I was recently reminiscing as to why we were so critical of Lenny, because he did so many things, right? He wrote classical music. He wrote Broadway. He played jazz piano. He was one of the world's great conductors. And I thought, who was his idol? And it brought me back to the time in 1976 when he came to the Gershwin Theater where I was conducting Porgy and Bess, and he came to see it. And he came backstage afterwards, and he took me in his arms and he said, I've waited 40 years to hear this done like this. You've done it. I don't have to. And he said, but tell me something. Why did you cut out? And he started singing from memory the most obscure parts of the score, because we had to get in within 3 hours. And he had never conducted the score. He'd only studied it. And so you realize the brain that he had. But where I'm going with this was, Gershwin was his idol. When you look at what George Gershwin did, George Gershwin wrote symphonic music. He used the jazz vernacular, and with symphonic construction, classical music construction.
Piano concertos,
and American in Paris, all that are a result of his studying. And, of course, the great Porgy and Bess, which is a magnificent and difficult composition in its total scope. And he wrote Broadway shows. He wrote movies. He didn't conduct, but that's the only thing he didn't do.
And, of course, the pianist.
Piano.
And the pianist. So he saw music as not being so categorized, but music as being music and bringing the experience of music into each other's world. And so while I think when we listen to something from On the Town, we're definitely looking at Lenny writing Broadway jazz. But soon after that, when you start looking at the Chichester Psalms, and you start looking at the Mass, you start hearing the vernacular coming in with Lenny into his classical compositions. To me, it's all Gershwin. Gershwin was the big idol.
Well, that's a good one to have, especially for an American composer.
Right? Exactly.
Well, let's see what we hear in On the Town, then, in this episode from it. Times Square, 1944, by Leonard Bernstein.
That was the Times Square Dance from On the Town by Leonard Bernstein, who was conducting things there. And you are going to be including several different kinds of pieces in these Bernstein Memory concerts. And you were talking about an obscure aria that will be included from Candide.
Right. Well, Candide was one of those shows that it was like, the problem child. And the score became immediately a cult phenomenon. To this day, we admire that score as being one of the brilliant scores. But the libretto from Lillian Hellman was just all over the place. I mean, they really couldn't get a handle on the work, and it did not succeed from a libretto standpoint. And then, of course, Hal Prince came along in the 70s, I believe, and found you know, they got permission to write an entire new book, but keep a lot of Lenny's music. But they shaped it for a Broadway show sensibility of that time, and a lot of the music, of course, had to go. And then after that show was a success, they decided to bring that version into the Opera House, because when that show first opened, and I saw the original outing of that Candide, it was a charming, marvelous production, but it had like a 14-piece Tinker Toy orchestra, and everything about it was like a three-ring circus, and it was just great. But they decided to take that version and try to get it into the Opera House, which means they could restore the original orchestrations and get the more symphonic orchestral accompaniment to the piece. That was okay for a while. And then shortly before Lenny died, they revisited it yet again to try to get more of the music that he composed. There was a wonderful aria for the tenor called Nothing More Than This. And we will do that along with, of course, the great aria Glitter and Be Gay from Candide, which is for the coloratura soprano, which everyone knows. And, of course, the overture is based on those themes.
Now, I was speaking of the various kinds of music that come into the music of Leonard Bernstein. You mentioned the Mass a while ago, John, and the different influences that we find in that.
Well, I mean, just if you look at the record cover of all the different kinds of components that were in the Mass, you know, there was a rock group, and there was all kinds of electric instruments, electric guitar, bass guitar, all of these vernacular instruments, boy choir, chorus, Alvin Ailey Dance Company. You know, it was really quite
a happening.
Exactly. Set up, not a three-ring circus.
You know, set up for the opening of the Kennedy Center. But what I think is interesting is at the time, you know, that was a very controversial piece because it was, you know, a version of the Roman Catholic Mass, and yet it was dramatic, it was blasphemous, and it was pagan in a way. You know, I mean, it was bringing in the street vernacular into this religious experience. I mean, even the Chichester Psalms with its 7-4 rhythm, which is, and its boisterous rejoicing, you know, is again a more primitive than what we would associate with 18th and 19th century and even early 20th century church music. I mean, it's like taking the pagan idea of Karl Orff and saying, well, it doesn't have, you know, and Carmina Burana saying, it doesn't have to just be pagan. We can actually use this music to celebrate religion. Well, now you go to a Roman Catholic Mass and there's a folk Mass, you know, and there's guitars playing and you know, the rock beat. And we have Christian rock.
Yeah,
and
so it pretty, really caught on, didn't
pretty
it?
Really heavy Christian rock. So in a way, Lenny was just ahead of his time, like most geniuses are.
And this is what a little bit of it sounds like, the Gloria Tibi from the Mass by Leonard Bernstein.
And peace on earth to men of goodwill.
There you get the idea, even in a two-minute selection there from the Bernstein Mass, all the different influences.
Bringing pop culture and a little bit of jazz and everything together. I think Bernstein was one of the first to do that. One of the pieces you're doing this weekend is from the White House Cantata, is that right?
I think that's an outtake from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the show of his that failed on Broadway. And it's just a charming offbeat march. You know, it's a march, but every now and then there's a couple extra beats in it. But it sounds very American. It's great. And I thought it'd be... I was listening to a collection of his songs, and I thought it would be... when I heard that, I thought, oh, that'll be fun, because nobody knows it that well, but they're just going to be, you know, so delighted when they hear it, and it'll be a little surprise for everybody.
I have a sense there'll be surprises, a lot of surprises in this Bernstein concert that you're putting on this coming weekend. There's so much variety there.
You know, one of the things I think will come through, though, is that he has a voice. He has a sound. Mm-hmm. He has that interval of the seventh, which he uses in There's a Place for Us, and it's all over the place on the waterfront. And, you know, you realize and he used to say how difficult it was for him after conducting the New York Philharmonic all year to go in the summer. He just sort of did like what Mahler did. He would go in the summer and compose. But he said it would take him a month to get all of the music out of his head that he was conducting all year and try to get in touch with his own voice. And I think this concert will show that no matter what idiom he was working in, there are things that make Bernstein sound like Bernstein. And for that reason, you know, he has his own voice and
he's style.
Style. He's a great composer.
Well, great opportunity to hear some. And we should remind you of your opportunity to hear that Bernstein before we go to a little bit more. And then just bear with us. The quiz question will be a little bit late today, but worth waiting for.
Well, the details of the concert are that it's Friday night at 7:30 and Saturday night at 8:00 and a little early on Sunday to allow for, I don't know, some game later in the day. Sunday at 1 o'clock is the concert time this weekend. And you have soloists and the Madison Symphony Chorus joining the Madison Symphony Orchestra. So it's bound to be lively.
And the Madison Youth Choirs are going to be there for the Gloria TV.
Oh, excellent.
Well, John Demain, thanks for coming by and sharing some Bernstein with us this hour.
Thank you for having me.
A great pleasure. And now, as I mentioned, the quiz question after this, which is a thing worth listening to as we wait for that quiz question. It's, I guess you'd say, the big hit from Candide, other than the overture. Maybe. Make Our Garden Grow.
Yes. I mean, there was Glitter and Be Gay, of course, is the big aria. But Make Our Garden Grow is such a magnificent statement at the end of the show, which, you know, you travel the whole world, but it's really each other that it's all about.
No, we won't think noble because we're not noble. We won't live in beautiful harmony because there's no such thing in this world, nor should there be. We promise only to do our best and live out our lives. Dear God, that's all we can promise in truth. Marry me, Cunegonde.
One more that you can hear this weekend with the Madison Symphony and that Bernstein concert.
And that was Make Our Garden Grow. A wonderful ensemble there, and you'll hear the Madison Symphony soloists and chorus all under the direction of John Demain at the Overture Center in Madison.